with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, welcome to Rockin' Fin Radio with me, Tom P. A lot of stuff going on. Stripers, Tog, blah, 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 stock trout. Largemouth, they're going crazy. Hey, that season closes. Catch and release only now until June, June 16th? Pickerel are going bats. Crappies are going crazy. But the magic word is weak fish. Joining us in our next couple of segments, Captain Al Crudelli on the Bayhound. Oh, yeah. Out of Sea Isle. Oh, yeah. ICW and Back Bay Weakfish. The Tide Runners are here. Been here for maybe a week or so. He'll key you in on how to get them. A little later on, Tony McBride, Supervising Biologist, Division of Fish and Wildlife, Bureau of Wildlife Management, and a turkey project leader, gives us his prospectus, upcoming turkey season. And for all those people with the rainbow trout in the freezer, Chef Gene Demange. With a rainbow trout recipe, it'll make your tongue slap your brains out. Grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. How good is this?
Download Rack and Fin Radio as a podcast on the WPG Talk Radio app. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Free health care. Hundreds to more than $1,000 per month in disability compensation and tens of thousands for college tuition. Choose VA and see why veterans' trust in VA reached an all-time high. Claim the benefits you've earned at choose.va.gov.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM, South Jersey's talk station.
We know the Tog Bite is going strong. The stripers are, the bite's increasing, it seems, by the day. A lot of keeper fish around. Drums rolling east. Check out my blog tomorrow, Saturday. It's going to be on ESPN 97.3 and Catcatcher 107.3. Drums rolling east, man. They are being caught in Great Bay in some decent numbers. But, hey, man, the magic word this time of year. Been around for about a week, maybe 10 days or so. And when I first moved down to the area, 88, 89, down to Ocean City and fishing Strathmere and Whale Creek and all the way down, weak fish. Man, they were all over weak fish. Slow but sure comeback. Now, you know, check some of the magazines or some articles out there as to why the weak fish, the recovery is so slow. A lot of fingers pointing to the stripers themselves and also the dolphins. Yeah, predation. All those little spikies coming down, those 6, 7, 8 inches coming down in the fall. Man, they ain't coming back. But there are some fish around, a.k.a. the 4, 5, 6-plus pounders, tide runners. Put a call into what I consider, I call him the Swami of the Weakies, Captain Al Crudelli on the Bayhound out of Sea Isle. Been fishing these areas since he was a kid, and he is dialed in to the weak fish bite, which is going on. And also, he turned me on years ago to that speckled trout bite in October and early November back there. Captain Al, sorry I had to spill the beans. How you doing, little brother?
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Al, weak fish. Jimmy, Michael, your nephew Dominic. I mean, weak fish crew. And listen, this is how confident Captain Crew is. I asked him, I said, Al, what's the secret with catching weak fish? What he says, the secret of catching weak fish is, remember, Crew? A lot of people just don't know how to catch them. See, you call that one, Crew. You call that one. Al, the bite's been around now. What do you figure? A week, 2 weeks, maybe?
Yeah, probably right. Yeah, probably. Few fish were available right before the moon. And then the fish got, my boys went and got them right after, So, they were probably available then. You probably triggered them. It's fairly warm in the bay. Water's been extremely clean. There's a lot of forage. There's a lot of shrimp.
Yeah.
Meat fish. So, all the players were there.
And Al, what surprised me is the few times I've caught them, listen, I've gone a lot, but the few times I've caught them, it's always been at night, Al. But Jimmy and Mike and Dom, they were catching them during the day.
Yeah, daytime. It's a tide, right? Nighttime, they get nocturnal when there's a lot of boat pressure, a little later when the jet skis and all the, and the people come down and they like to ride around. They're looking to hunker down and feed at night more then, but now they're hungry. They're in the back bay. They're looking for one thing: feed and spawn.
So Al,
yes, sir.
It was a combination: water temperature, plenty of forage. Besides shrimp, what's back there? Spearing. What do you have?
Yeah, there's spearing. There's quite a few spearing. There's a lot of killies. What normal we buy is as minnows at the tackle store for fluke. There's quite a few of those. There's a lot of small crabs of all sorts. But shrimp is the main thing, both sands and the grass shrimp. They're both number one on Wiki's, especially the size that are back there now, the 3 to 5 pounders. They actually gorge themselves on them.
Al, now these have been known for generations as the tide runners. They were so plentiful. I remember back in the early 80s, I had an opportunity to fish, God rest his soul, Captain Greg Venturo in Delaware Bay, and never saw anything like it before or since. But when I moved down to the area, Al, 88, 89, I live in Ocean City, Strathmere, down here, Stone Harbor, whatever, always seemed April, always some weekies in the back. And it waned, what, Al? What do you think? 7, 8, 9 years ago when it went to a one fish limit? What do you think happened?
Yeah, it's been probably a dozen years, I pulled my log. It's probably been, we've been seeing a decline. Like any fishery time, there was a lot of big fish right before it was over. And then, the bigger fish and then none, but any healthy species, any healthy, there's gotta be all sizes. There's gotta be small and large fish right. Mixed. And we weren't seeing that right before they were almost non-existent for about 3 years. It's to the point where we were bothering fishing for them,
But now the tide runners that are here, like you said, 3 pounds, 4 pounds, 5 pounds. I've seen some bigger in the 6, 7 pound range. What can we expect now in that ICW in the Back Bay area? Fish that size going to consistently, or some small ones going to be in the mix?
I would expect to see the 3 to 5 pounders, like the boys call it, like what's back there now, for the first push of fish for the first run. The smaller ones will probably show up when the water gets warmer, probably closer, to Memorial Day line. Then they kind of disappear for a little while, and they're doing their. And then we always have what I always call a Father's Day run. And there was another push in the Back Bay, if you recall, years ago, probably one of the first times we fished together.
Right.
I took you in the middle of the afternoon. It was right around Father's Day. And we went in the back and we caught those nice 7, 8 pounders in the middle of the day. That was what I call a Father's Day run.
I'll never forget that trip. That was something. And you kept saying, just keep casting. I'm there humming a humming a high. I never saw anything like that in the Back Bay. Now, in Delaware Bay, that was one thing back in the early 80s, but that was something else to see in the backwaters. Now, Al, the area these fish are going to be frequenting chasing forage, 2 feet, 3 feet, they're going to be in the deeper holes during the day. What's the dealio?
This time of year, they're going to be, you're going to want your discharges. You're going to want your drains, your places where water's falling into the main channel. Weak fish, they're not necessarily always on the bottom. They almost always suspend. They feed up off the bottom. So, you're gonna want to fish. People want to go with a real heavy lead head right off the bat, and that's not what you want to do. You want to start light and work your way with the current, because they're not always feeding on the bottom. You want to work your outfalls. Your outgoing tide is usually better where there's a drain. Where there's your obvious spots are where creeks come, creeks empty into the main channel. But the better ones are the ones that you can't see. There's a lot of drains and a lot of creek beds that are out in the open, actually in the flats that can only be seen really at low tide. So what you want to do, not necessarily be a fishing expedition, but one day take a ride at low tide and carefully mark all these drains, all these places where these little ditches empty into the main channel, because the ones that are above water where the grass and there's creeks entering in the channel, everybody can see those. If you take the time and find the ones that are not so obvious to everyone, they're the little honey holes. They're the ones that you can really.
Exactly. Listen, exactly correct on that note. But I remember the one time you called it a ditch, just some little thing that they drug out for mosquitoes or something like that way back when. Little thing bubbling in, and you said, and listen, we're using small. Al, I remember, I said, am I fishing for freshwater trout or what? 1/8 ounce, a little grub, and I caught a weak fish. I remember it was spitting grass shrimp all over your boat.
That's right. That's, you're
so is that what's pouring out now in the affluent, a lot of grass shrimp and things like that?
Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, that stuff is not, it's being washed into the ditch or out of the ditch and into the main channel. So if you're getting right to the bottom, you're going to get gooped up and grassed up, and there's always some slime, some discharge. I mean, even in clear water, you're going to have some. So that getting right to the bottom will do that. It'll also get you out of, you know, out of the weakfish's bite range real quick. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to swim it. You want to swim it the best you can. That way, you know, above the bottom, that way you're not, you know, dredging the bottom, as I call it, or farming. You're constantly right. getting seaweed because you're right. hungry.
Joe's out of Rack and Fin Line this morning is Captain Al Crudelli, the Bay Hound. I call him he's the weak fish master of the Back Bay, the ICW, the Back Bays. Al, myriad waters back there. What are you looking at now to pick your spots? This, you know, then we just had that heavy rain. What was that, Thursday? Water's going to clear up eventually. Where are you picking? Like, okay, that, you know, say, just throw an example, Ludlam's Bay or this bay or that bay or this cut, yeah. that cut. Where are you concentrating your efforts? Where should people concentrate, rather, their efforts now?
You want to be as far away from the inlets as you can be without getting real, real shallow. You don't want to get up on the, you know, you don't want to get up in the back flats real far yet. You'll avail yourself. There'll be some stripers and things back there also, but you don't want to stay closer to the main channel, but not. For one, Ludlam's Bay, where everybody likes to start for fluke. That's an outstanding spot. Great sound between Avalon and Stone Harbor. Avalon and Sea Isle is another great spot. The Paddy's Hole area is the northern end of that. But there's great fishing down the Stone Harbor end, down to Scott's Bonnet entranceway, down it's, on the Stone Harbor Boulevard. An outstanding weakfish spot. Going up behind Ocean City, going past Corson's, going north, going towards the 34th Street Bridge. The Intercoastal Waterway is dynamite between Corson's Inlet and 34th Street Bridge.
Now, 51st Street was always hot for me. In fact, you and Dick Wood, but you didn't know, but both of you pointed out that spot. And George Loader, how are you, man, over there, my more? Said, Tom, you want some weakfish? Dick Wood called them trout. You want some trout? 51st Street. Now, that you used to be able to drive back there. Now I think it's all blocked off. But I would walk up, cross Weakfish Creek, needed waders to get there. But, Al, man, that was a bang them up for the weakfish. Whoa.
Right.
That old railroad bed. Mary, Mother of God.
Yeah, I have Weakfish Creek. That name comes by. It's called, honestly, that's a dynamite spot.
Yep.
Particularly where that empties into the Intercoastal Waterway. Although the creek itself, that's the one that actually goes underneath the causeway, the Rush Chatham Causeway. That's a dynamite creek, loaded with bait in there, loaded with bait, and doesn't get fished all that much. There's quite a few areas, you know, quiet. You want to be extremely quiet when you're looking. You want to be extremely quiet while you're fishing. You guys, these new trolling motors on your bout ought to be right where you need to be with one of those things, guys. I mean, yeah, I know you're killing the tog with them and it coming in handy for the fluking, but they'll be great for weak fishing too. They'll be absolutely fantastic for weak fishing. You can work some areas over. You want to work a spot for 10, 15, what I call quality casts before you decide that maybe you should move on. You know, I mean by quality casts, I mean good casts where you felt your retreat from start to finish, no grass. Was that a bite? Wasn't it a bite? Again, you know, no slime or grass on your rig. If you make 10 or 15 casts and don't get a bump, and then possibly you can move on. But, you can be a cast away from a bonanza, too. So, your spot really comes in handy, Tom.
Okay, Joe's on the line is Al Crudelli, Bayhound Charters out of Seattle. Talk is Weakfish in the Back. Al, we're up against a heartbreaker hanging in for another segment, correct?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Okay, and by the way, people, this man has the ultimate the Clydesdale workhorse of beagles. Little Sandy girl, she can find the bunnies from the cottontails to the swampers. But Al, that's for a subject for the fall. People, grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back with Captain Al Crudelli and Bayhound. Rack and Fin Radio.
If you're wondering what to do with your money in these unusual economic times, or if you have questions about retirement planning, IRAs, 401ks, or taxes, then listen to The Heart of Your Money, Saturday morning at 8 on WPG, featuring author and financial expert Joe Yakovich. The Heart of Your Money will focus on you, your family, and your financial portfolio. The Heart of Your Money with Joe Yakovich, Saturday morning at 8 on WPG, Talk Radio 95.5.
The COVID-19 pandemic continues to weigh on us all, but we can turn worry into action. Wear a mask and keep 6 feet of space between yourself and others in public. Wash your hands often and stay home if you're sick. Go to cdcfoundation.org to learn more.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go, look out below, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of April 17th and 18th. Very special guest on the line, Captain Al Crudelli III, Bayhound Charters out of Seattle, talking one of his specialties. Man, I call him the Swami. You want Weefish? This is the man out there out of Seattle, Stone Harbor, that whole back bay and ICW area. Crew, one of the questions I want to ask you, I've fished with you several times just with the weekies, caught them, whatever. But I noticed the bigger fish, now, they in pods, they single, they in pairs. It's not like when you get those, you know, the 12 to 16 inches that happen to be schools all over the place. What's the dealio with the numbers?
Yeah, there's probably, they definitely group together in size. You will catch more than one, quite fish from an area. Very, very seldom. Yep. The only thing that will happen is it very shortly there will be bluefish starting to show up.
Yep.
Once the bluefish start to show up, it puts another little trick into it where you have to try. As hard as it is, you have to try to avoid them a little bit, which could curtail the numbers that you get from a spot. But if, until they show up, it's not uncommon to pick a half a dozen quality fish from an area. Keeping in mind that we haven't kept any weak fish except for those that are hurt. They tend to swallowed. They tend to swallow your lead head, and particularly for someone who's getting used to the type of fishing that we're doing. They do tend to really sock the jig down. So occasionally they will get hooked in the gills, but they're really the only ones we keep anymore. There's plenty of other fish to eat, and with the comeback, they are showing a comeback. So we're trying to help a little, but. Mm-hmm. It is possible to get a half a dozen quality fish from a spot,
Sure.
As long as there's not a lot of bluefish there to harass them.
Al, the stealth factor. I mean, I know you use light tackle. I see some guys there. The ultralight thing to me, as much as I like the whole deal, it's not, when you have a big fish on there, that fish is getting stressed the longer that fight goes on. So Al, tackle-wise, stealth, quiet approach, low profile, that type of thing. But are you using a basic fluke tackle? Are you going a little lighter, a little heavier? What's the deal?
No, but you're seven foot forgiving, fast action rod work well. Again, you're matching your rod and your tackle has to be able to cast the lure that the artificial that you're using to catch the fish. So if they're if they're eating something small and they're feeding up in the water column like we mentioned earlier, and you're having to cast maybe up to 3/8 of an ounce, but usually a little lighter of a lead head and a lure, you're not going to be able to do that with an 8 to 12 pound outfit. You're going to have to scale down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then the forgiveness of the rod, the bend of the rod will, get more weak fish to your net. They do have, they don't call them weak fish because they don't fight. Everybody knows they have that paper mouth. And a hard pull on a stiff rod, especially using braid like we do today, will result in some lost fish if your rod's not flimsy. You're not pliable enough to absorb the bend, to make up for what the braid takes away.
Al, for a leader, fluorocarbon, mono, what's your choice?
I start right now, without bluefish being around, we'll use it 15. 15 is more than adequate. And that could be just overhand surgeon, not triple surgeon, not right to your braid. You don't have to worry about a double shot or a hot shot in it, or double your line. It kind of restricts your casting a little bit. But I'll start with 15. Once bluefish show up, you have to go to 20, and you'll sacrifice some bites for it. But, it will save you some redheads, because a 15 pound is nothing to a bluefish. 20 really isn't either, you'll get more.
But Al,
get a couple more out of it.
But Al, do you find with the weak fish, especially the bigger ones, the older ones, the smarter ones have been around, fluorocarbon necessary, or is a clear mono or tinted mono, will that suffice?
Well, I certainly have used mono. I'm not saying I always use fluorocarbon, but you know, looking at the water clarity today is, you know, it's fluorocarbon all the way, and that should be your, you know, that should be your determining factor. You know, common sense that, you know, your water's super clear. And keep in mind, just because it might not be too super clear on top, it is right now, which tells me it's clear top to bottom. Sometimes it's not clear on top, but it's clear on the bottom, right, and vice versa sometimes, you know. But usually, you know, the bottom will be a little clearer.
Al, I've seen you whip the round reels, the low-profile baitcasters, the spinning. Do you prefer spinning in this situation? And if so, absolutely, on the spinning reel, do you back off on that drag a little bit when it comes to these weeks?
Not particularly. I mean, drag should be set before you start fishing and not touched, you know, unless you catch a big fish, it really works your drag and you have to reset. You know, drag should be set strong enough that, you know, when you get a bite, when you lift, which is not a hard hook set, by the way, it's just a lift of the rod when you feel the gentle bite, you know, it's all it is, small tap. It's just a lift of the rod. You don't want to pull your head off when you go to set the hook. But, you know, the gentle lift and your hand on the handle helps. No slack after the bite. The bite is very similar to a largemouth bass eating a worm.
Yep.
You know, when you eat a rubber worm, bingo, you get that. There's a little lightness and a tick or a push in your line, and you feel the tick, and that's the bite. And if your hand's not on the handle, if you wait, the weak fish will blow it out just as fast as you sucked it in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why you have to be concentrate on what you're doing, hand on the handle, and work your lure, all different methods. And, you know, when you do get a bite, try to remember what you were doing when you got the bite and repeat it. That's important also.
Here, speaking of Captain Al Cordelli on the Bayhound, he is the master weak fisher man in the back ICW and back bays. He's Ocean City South, man. Captain Al does it. Well, crew, let me ask you this. The payload, the delivery, okay, lead heads, plastics. Now, the one time we went out, we just started the ad campaign for the Azuri Crystal Minnow. And Dick Wood says, give Crudelli a call, see if these trout will eat these. And we have those little, 3 3/8 or 4 inches. And Al, I'll never forget that, knocked the snot out of them. But you seem to be a proponent of the soft plastic, the Mr. Twister, Sassy Shads, the Zooms, what have you. Plastics, crankbaits, what's your choice and why?
Yeah, plastics are a little more versatile. Crankbaits and twitch baits, but mirrors, yeah, those kind of things, they work very, very well.
Oh yeah,
they're a little bit more of a acquired taste, though. You know, they're a slower fishing lure. You have to find the depth. There's a lot of thinking involved. You have to count down your lure to where you got the bite, and you have to remember where you count down to when you got the bite. Where a lot of guys don't want to get all that involved. Where with a lead head, you can, you know, it's still the same kind of concentration level, but it's a lot more versatile. You can work up near the surface. If the bluefish tend to be a problem, you can overcast them and work the lure under where the body of fish is. I mean, there's more things you can do, and as well as there's a lot more variation of color that you can do when you're they make hard baits of every color. It's a lot easier to reach in a bag and change a rubber than it is to change a plug.
this is exactly correct. I just wanted to clear that because I fished with you, and we caught them on both. I've watched you just give tutorials. Listen, it's with the plastics and the twitch baits, crank baits, what have you, the hard baits. Captain Al is there. Well, now listen, profile.
Yes,
how important is the profile and also the color? What is it, Crudelli, with friggin' pink with the weak fish?
Now,
I don't understand
pink is everything. It looks like anything but pink in the water. It's a shiner. It's a great color day or night. Low light at nighttime, pink shines. If you ever look at a shiner under a flashlight, fresh out of the water, and look at the hue, and you'll understand. Pink is certainly a great color. All variants of pink are a great color. Pink mixed with other colors is very good. Again, I said earlier about confidence. It's what you have confidence in. Pink is not my go-to color, although I certainly have a lot of pink lures on hand.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people are, You know, they are partial to pink. You know, I prefer, you know, a little bit more of a natural color. You know, an Al White or Arkansas Shiner is my go-to. Texas Chili.
Texas Chili. That got a 7-8 pounder on the boat for us. Whoa.
Yeah, that's a great, you know, and that was in, you know, then you're talking about, you know, silhouettes, talking about paddle tails, straight tails, and twisted
right.
tails, which, you know, they all have their right time or place. You know, as far as today's go for, I see most guys reaching for the paddle tails, which is, there's nothing wrong with, but don't forget twisters and straight tails. Finesse type tails also have their mm-hmm. time and place, and they certainly outfish. You know, sometimes weak fish don't want all that throb of their paddle tail gibs. You know, but they, you know, you want a little something, so a twister tail get.
Right.
Sometimes when the bluefish are bad, the paddle tails and the twister tails get a lot more attention from the bluefish, as
go.
Do the pinks and the rowdier colors. They'll get a little more attention from the weak fish. From the bluefish than you'd want. You know. You know, nobody wants bluefish until the weak fish aren't biting.
Right. The bluefish are the Lee sisters at last call. That's
yeah, exactly. Nobody ever has a bad time catching one, but oh, right. that damn blue. Yeah. You know. Meanwhile, I'm losing hundreds of dollars of tackle every trip. Right.
Captain Al,
I love them.
The scent factor for the weak fish. You know, there's the gulp. Yeah. There's the spray on scent. Yeah. So the scent and baits. I'm a fan of the Mr. Twister Exude. We all know that.
Yes.
You find that a factor, a tiebreaker maybe, if the weak fish put on the finicky act? What do you think?
It certainly doesn't hurt, but more importantly is keeping your own hands clean, because you're changing rubber, you're changing baits quite often. Smoking cigarettes is you know, if you do that and change baits, you know, that scent gets on your lure. You know, obviously bug sprays, sunscreen, mm-hmm. those kind of things. You know, you want to keep that off your baits more. You know, I'd be more concerned with that than worrying about drowning your baits. And gulp definitely works. They got some great shapes and sizes to match what goes mm-hmm. on for, you know, the weak fish are feeding on. Gulp's definitely worth the. As there's some of the Exude. You know, Mr. Twisters are awesome lures. You know, every year I'm hawking you for some. You know, they're great. The slugs they're awesome. You know, they have a scent. You know, but they also have the finlets on the bottom that you can add a scent.
The RT slug. The RT slug. Listeners, check it out.
Yeah, RT slug. That's exactly. Yeah, they're very, very, very good on fluke also. Scent is very, you know, it has its importances, but more importantly is keeping your hands clean of anything that can foul up your lure, because you are changing lures frequently. And, you know, the guys that try, you don't have to throw them away, but, you know, when they get torn and they're not riding on the lead head right mm-hmm. and they're pulling to the side and things like that, you might want to change them, guys, because the weak fish is, you know, you're weak fishing. It could make a difference. You know, I know they get expensive and they get nicked up, and then when the flukes start biting them and there's other things nibbling at them, mm-hmm. as soon as they get a little tore up on the lead head, you know, once you rehook them a half a dozen times and they're not swimming right, it's time to cash them in. But
Al, in closing, the conservation aspect, been on your boat times where we're catching the croakers, we're catching the smaller weeks, we're catching the fluke, we're catching the trigger fish. And you know, you always stress keeping it to what you can eat. Fresh fish is good. Freezing a few is okay. The conservation factor when it comes to the weak fish, there's a guy, it was a couple of years ago out right at the Ocean City Strathmere, you know, the bridge going over there, at that hole right there. He's sticking his big ass weak fish in a cooler, and he's bitching and moaning, crew. I put this into my blog. He's bitching and moaning. Al, the fish was maybe 6-7 pounds. Yeah, we used to catch him by the dozens here, now one in fish. And I'm saying to myself, I'm saying, how much weak fish can you eat, man? Now, you've always stressed the conservation factor. Just take what you can take. Weak fish doesn't freeze well, not like fluke or striper. So you see that going along. It's another long road. And this is another bend in the long road to get the weak fish coming back. Al, you've always stressed the conservation factor. And just give us a closing comment on it, please.
It's like anything else. Everybody enjoys it. They're beautiful fish. You know, they're everybody likes catching them. There's a stealth mode. There's a stealth tactic to catch them. The kayak guys like them. The guys that sneak around at night like to catch fish for them. You know, there's a lot of players in the game. You know, it's for my, you know, and there's going to be guys that argue with me about it, and everybody has their right, and just as I do to say it, that they're not my favorite fish to eat. I don't think that there's a lot of things better.
Yeah.
But it's all right to keep one a person, you know, and they don't eat them that much, but that often, like I said, but, you know, you're right to keep one. Keep it in mind that, you know, the ones that don't be disappointed when we clean it for you, or when you clean it, that, you know, if it's a 5-6 pounder, it's full of eggs.
That's the big part
of the reason why they're back there now, you know. If you have other fish in the core to eat, you know, you might want to think about a nice photo and letting that go. You know, they are beautiful, and who knows? You know, maybe your grandkid would like to catch one someday.
Crew, you know? Thanks much. Hey, by the way, before I let you go, how is the very cool Mom Crudelli?
She's doing great. She's getting ready to go to Florida, I believe.
Oh, man, she can really roll it. Well, crew, thanks much. Listen, it's Captain Al Crudelli and Bayhound Charters out of CL. Al, give that phone number, please, website, Facebook page. What do you got?
609-602-2662. Give me a call. I'd be happy to take these out.
Okay, crew, you take care, man. And best to Jimmy, Nicole, and Mikey, and Dominic, your nephew Dominic, Antoinette, right? You got a whole crew there. The whole crew.
I'll pass it around, and as usual, thanks very much for having me on board, Tom.
We'll see you, crew.
I really enjoyed it.
Take care, little brother. Bye. Long on that segment up against the break. It was Captain Al Crudelli and the Bayhound. Week Fish are here. Give it up a few weeks. The Blues are here now. So figure maybe, man, they interfere. Once like they roar in the Great Bay, woo! There go the Stripers. So get on a Week Fish now in the back. Captain Al's a boat there. Get on a kayak, whatever. I like to walk to Sedge Banks. And there are plenty of weak fish there. Big, man, I don't know. To eat? They're right. Remember, these are spawners. Okay, be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio, 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's number one talk station.
News. I'm Jill Nato. Johns Hopkins says the world has now seen 3 million deaths from COVID, some of that driven by new variants. To fight those, White House advisor on COVID response, Andy Slavitt, said Friday,
"We are announcing a $1.7 billion investment to bolster the ability of the CDC and public health departments to monitor, track, and defeat emerging threats."
Hopkins says the U.S. has seen over 560,000 deaths from COVID. In Minnesota's Brooklyn Center last night, protesters threw rocks and bottles at police. Police used tear gas on the protesters as they demand justice for the killing of Dante Wright. State Police Colonel Matt Langer said of the violence,
"We need help from Minnesotans to stand up and say that this can't be tolerated."
About 100 people arrested. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. On and off sunshine, today the high will be 61. Overcast tonight, low 41, and mostly cloudy tomorrow, Sunday's high 65. Tomorrow night, cloudy skies, low 47. Partly sunny at first Monday, but showers in the area, that day's high 68. And sunny on Tuesday, high 71. I'm AccuWeather's Sally Sherman on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Download Rack and Fin Radio as a podcast on the WPG Talk Radio app. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Welcome back to Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of April 17th and 18th. Hey, man, a couple of weeks, actually starting Monday, April 26th. Wild turkey season gets underway. It's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 week period. Segment A is going to be Monday, April 26th to Friday, April 30th. Period B, Monday, May 3rd to Friday, May 7th. Hunting period C, week C. That's us, man. We have week C locked in. Turkey hunting area 16, baby. Got the permits online, the leftover permits. And within, I think, 4 minutes of getting our second one, they were sold out, man. That area is hot. Okay, hunting period D is Monday, May 17th. to Friday, May 21st, and then May 24th to Friday, May 28th. And period E is all Saturdays, May 1st, 8th, 15th, and 22nd. We're seeing turkeys all over the place. However, I'm just looking at some numbers here. It has me a little concerned here. Last year's spring harvest was 2,850. That was the second lowest since, I think, 2004 or 5. So I want to get a prospectus on this season, man. They're strutting. They're calling. We put a couple to bed, a couple of gobblers, put them to sleep, man, because they're out there. They want it. We've seen them in the field strutting around. Put a call into Tony McBride for his annual spring gobbler season prospectus. He's a supervising biologist, Division of Fish and Wildlife, Bureau of Wildlife Management. He is King Gobbler. He is the man, the one, the guy when it comes to turkeys. Hi, Tone. Sorry, I get too excited talking to you, man. How's it going?
That's all right. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Oh, I got. Oh, working on some new box call tones here, Tone.
There you go.
Oh, it's crazy. But, Tone, we're seeing a lot of turkeys this spring. The harvest last year, it wasn't bad. 2,800-something birds, down a few from the year previous, but down significantly from, like I said, since 2004 or 5, T. Is it, and yet the population seems to be, as the estimates, Division of Fish and Wildlife, 22 to 23,000. Is it weather, Tony? Is it recruitment, hatch success for the following year? Why are the numbers not really jumping?
Yes, a couple different things. So back in the year 2000, 2001, our population was at its peak. And a lot of states saw this, 20 years after they first were reintroduced. You get this peak in population where the population is really too high for the amount of habitat. It kind of overshoots what they call carrying capacity, which is the amount of habitat available can support that number of birds. And, over time, we've come down into an equilibrium with, the amount of birds our habitat can support. It also considers the weather, the predator base, all of those different things that factor in over time. And, we're a little bit lower than we were back then. So, the turkeys aren't in every field like they used to be back in the early 2000s.
Okay.
So we still have a healthy population, and our harvest is staying within 5 to 10% of what it is for the last 5 years.
Yeah,
so
2018,
hopefully that'll continue.
2018, it had 2,864 birds last year, or 2019, rather, 2,739. So that's still almost 3,000 gobblers. And those are good numbers considering our size and the availability of public hunting, which is pretty good considering Jersey's size. Now, 14, 15, 16, 20, and 22, those turkey hunting areas, tradition, and Tone, I'll tell you, my whole thing was when they were first introduced way back when, going up to the north, you always went to Sussex, you always went to Warren. The southern tier counties, Tony, are still turkey factories from what I can see.
They sure are. So the areas out by the Delaware Bayshore, Cumberland, Salem, Gloucester, those areas are still phenomenal. Areas 20, 15, 21, 22. But those birds farther to the north, just took them a little bit longer to get acclimated to those different conditions in the sandier soils and our pine lands habitat. But once they did, they really did really well. And, the birds are still struggling a little bit in the core pines, like in a real central, like Wharton State Forest type areas. The birds are there, but they're just not as abundant. And we knew that would happen. But areas to the periphery, like you mentioned, 14 and parts of 16 and 15, they're still doing really well.
16, man. Sweet 16. That's our number, T. Oh. Are we seeing some
birds
out there?
Southern part.
Yeah. Hey, Tony, listen.
Down by Mays Landing, places like that.
Shut up. McBride, you should keep it quiet. You're killing me. Jesus, did somebody tell him that? Mays Landing, Mill May. Nice going, McBride. Hey, listen, Tony.
I know those areas.
How was last year's reproductive success on the overall? Are any estimates on that? I mean, rain, predation, good or what?
Yeah, it was on the low side. So our official estimate was 2.3, which is low. We like to be closer to 3. And, it was comparable to other productivity in the Mid-Atlantic region. So we're part of a regional study now. So we look at our own poult productivity and we also compare it. We supply our data to a national program that looks at it on the regional level. And we were pretty comparable to other states in our region. So that's all weather related. Nothing we can really do about it if we have some rain events. I think you might remember last spring we had a late frost. So, things like that can impact our turkeys.
Now, Tony, to the west of us, Pennsylvania, they've curtailed, I guess, the fall seasons or whatever in several of their game lands, and they outlawed rifles now for hunting turkeys in the fall. I talked to one biologist out there. Pocono Boathouse or something like that. He was a biologist who was in there. He was picking up fishing license or whatever. And we were talking about it, and he was, even though he was with the Pennsylvania Boat Commission, the guy was an avid turkey hunter. He said, remember, out here in the fall, that's like a bonus. The fall turkey season's a bonus. And now the guys are out there deer hunting or whatever, bear hunting, they have a rifle, boom, and they're taking a percentage of birds so that they wouldn't otherwise get. Now with the populations in some game lands on the wane, so to speak, or in a downturn, that's going to make a difference. Or so the saying goes.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, so, we're fortunate in New Jersey that our fall season is conservative, and not a lot of people are into fall turkey hunting in New Jersey, but it's great for the people that are. The season's there for them.
Right.
But we're not harvesting enough hens in the fall so that it's a concern for us, which is a good thing.
So, Tony, on the overall, we're still looking at a statewide flock of 22, 23,000 birds. Will it get any bigger?
It can get bigger. There's room for it to get bigger. For that to happen, we would need two or three phenomenal hatch years in a row, and you'd see that population shoot right back up again.
Well, Tony,
it's all a matter of how many poults can be produced on the ground, you know, in a couple years in a row.
So even in you know, the wilder areas, the more remote areas, these birds are, it seems, are eventually going to find a way into the suburbs and start mugging postal carriers and grandmas with the kids for waiting for the school bus. You know what I mean? So
that happens a little bit these days. Not as much as it used to.
So they will. Where are they going to disperse?
There's room even in the wildlands of New Jersey for a higher turkey density.
Okay.
So the densities that we saw back in the early 2000s, you know, we have room biologically for more turkeys on the landscape.
Okay.
And the habitat will fill in if we get the right productivity conditions.
So, Tony, we have quality turkey habitat. Are there any turkey habitat specific programs out there, enhancements or anything, or they just leave it to the wild?
No, there's a little bit going on. You know, we cooperate with the National Wild Turkey Federation on some habitat initiatives, and we work with landowners in different different aspects of that, trying to get people to do things on our properties. And we do things as an agency on our fish and wildlife management areas, you know, where we can plant certain crops that help turkeys and create brood habitat for the summertime for the poults. There's always some kind of habitat management going on our land.
Okay.
And that management benefits a whole host of species, including turkeys.
Fair enough. We're speaking with Tony McBride, supervising biologist, Division of Fish and Wildlife. He's head of the Turkey Project. So, Tone, in a few seconds, your perspectives for the 2021 spring season, go.
I think we'll be within about 5% of last year's harvest. We have a lot of permits sold, but a little bump in the number of permits last couple of years, which
right.
is great to see. I think because of last year's productivity, we won't see as many juveniles in the harvest this year, but we had higher productivity the year before. So the number of two-year-old gobblers, which are the ones that come running in, tripping over their beards, are the, you know, when you start the call, right, when you're out there at Mays Landing, those should be the ones that, you know, will hopefully bump up, you know, keep the harvest a little bit higher for us this year.
Well, Tony, thanks much. Listen, it's Tony McBride, supervising biologist, Division of Fish and Wildlife, Bureau of Wildlife Management. He is a Turkey Project leader. And, Tony, great job with the birds. For what you can do, we have, for our size, availability of land and whatever, we have some of the best turkey hunting in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast region. It's phenomenal for what we have. Well, thanks so much. Before I let you go, how are Lydia and Steven doing?
They're doing great. Yeah, they're doing great. Lydia's finishing up college in another year or so, and Steven's gainfully employed, so they're both doing really well. Hopefully, I'll get out turkey hunting with them.
Did he get that Dodge Demon?
I
was worried about that, McBride. And listeners, by the way, young beautiful Lydia McBride, trapping this year, got a 50-pound beaver.
McBride, yeah, she got a nice one this year.
That was amazing. Hey, Tony, you take care. I'll see you in the field one of these days. Take care, brother.
All right, take care.
Be good. Yeah, some good turkey hunting coming up next week, man. We got Ronnie Jones coming up. Rednecks Pride, Game Calls and Outdoor Sense. Box call, and I'll tell you, and some of the things he can do with a diaphragm call. Just some little secrets here that you haven't heard before. Okay, man, be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Hey, you have those stock trout in the freezer. Tom P., what do I do with these? You're going to find out next segment. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
So what is Talk with a Purpose? It's a lively, informative, number one rated talk show on Saturday morning. Hi, this is John DeMasi. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 9 a.m. till noon for Talk with a Purpose, heard right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5. And if you miss it on Saturday, we replay it on Sunday from 5 until 8 p.m. Don't miss Talk with a Purpose, Saturday and Sunday, right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
Before you throw away those unused medicines, stop.
There are better ways to dispose of your unused meds to protect the ones you love.
To find a medicine disposal site near you, visit www.safe.pharmacy. A public service message from the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yeah, back on our final segment, Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of April 17th and 18th. Again, I was Tony McBride. We got a good gobbler season coming up, weather-wise, weather, fingers crossed. He busted me. Busted me and Dee Marie with the Mill May, Maze Landing area, turkey hunting area 16. But, oh, they are out there big time. As I close out the last segment, Tom P., man, you got us into trout fishing. We got these rainbow trout in the freezer. We tried frying them. What else can we do with them? They weren't really that good. You don't just throw a trout in a frying pan with some, you know, olive oil and butter or bacon, expect to be good. No, 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 no. These rainbow trout from the state, and they're anywhere from, again, these are 10.5 inches up to 4 or 5 pounds, some of these big ones. Recipe I have coming up with Chef Jeannie Dimash. Yeah, she's the one that gave that kick-ass cat kitten scratch it pheasant recipe. Back in the late fall, she has a rainbow trout recipe. It also works with brown trout if you're into the wild brown trout up there in North Jersey. But this is geared mainly to the stock rainbows. They're plentiful. Guys are kicking ass, gals are kicking ass, catching a load of them. And something simple, nothing too complicated. On the grill or in the oven, I said, Jeannie, I prefer to grill. I said, Tom P., grilling is this is when it's starting. She has a recipe. It's called, trout with a kick, spice it up with a kick, rowdy rainbow. I don't know what Chef Jeannie has, but I'll tell you, it is a luscious recipe. Chef Jeannie, how you doing?
Hi, Tom P., how are you?
Talking to you! And I got a rainbow trout recipe that I can't wait to try tomorrow night after we bang some around. Jean, you cook everything here, and this rainbow trout recipe, simple, but beyond just the throwing it in a frying pan. You know what I mean? You got it on the grill.
Correct.
Or in the oven, tin foil, and it's not that many ingredients. I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 ingredients, and that includes a little shake of salt and pepper, and in tin foil in a tent, and on the grill, Jeannie, trout spiced up with a kick. Go into it. Look, I'm wiggling in my chair. Oh, go into it, please.
Very, very easy. Spicy rainbow trout with a kick. Grill the whole trout with the head and tail on.
Uh-huh. Now you have, you have chops. I still don't get cilantro. To me, it's like arugula. Oh, I get it.
Cilantro. It's an herb from the coriander plant.
Okay.
It's bright green leaves with the stem of the plant. It's really popular ingredient in wide range of cuisines in Latin America, Mexico, mm-hmm. Caribbean, France. A lot of Mexican foods, yeah. Too.
Well,
tastes refreshing, citrusy.
Okay, I gathered that. But now we have, say you have 2 or 3 trout, okay? You have them cleaned, rinsed off, heads on, tails on, pat them dry with a paper towel, and then what do you do?
Pat it dry with the paper towel to prevent the fish from steaming when it's on the grill. So you don't want the fish to be steamed, even though it's in the foil. You loosen the foil, crimping the top, but tighten the ends of each foil, okay, to make the foil look like a boat or a packet.
Uh-huh.
So you want that fish to be dry so it's not steaming.
Now, what are you putting inside it?
Okay, so all of the ingredients go inside the trout after it's cleaned. So the chopped fresh cilantro would be a tablespoon.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that, you can use the spices from coriander in the food store. It's the same thing, coriander. Okay. If you don't have that, you can use basil or parsley. Then the next thing is 2 cloves of minced garlic. Mince it by hand, or you can buy the store-bought jar.
She said that for my benefit, people.
Well, I like to do it by hand.
I'm into the speed. Ease, speed, and convenience. Go. Or, yeah, I see you have, you hand wrote, you said a tablespoon of garlic powder as well. That works?
That works, too. That's easy, too.
Okay. What's next?
Okay. Then 1 tablespoon of olive oil. I prefer extra virgin.
Okay.
Right there.
Extra virgin. I see olive oil. I see virgin olive oil. Extra virgin, and then some extra super virgin olive oil. Is it the flavor? Is it how it sticks to the meat? What's the dealio?
It's more flavorful. It's not too oily. The regular olive oil would be too oily and heavy.
Okay.
So this would work better on the grill. Now, if you were putting this, like frying it in the pan, you wouldn't use the extra virgin because that would like smoke up the.
Okay.
It doesn't cook well.
Okay.
Okay.
After the olive oil, what do we have?
Okay. 1 teaspoon of chili powder or cayenne pepper.
I mean, a teaspoon, is that going to make my nose run? Or is that just a
little? No, the chili powder is not as hot. The cayenne pepper would be much hotter. It would be hotter than a jalapeno pepper.
Whoa. Don't want that.
The cayenne.
Okay.
Okay. But you can use that interchangeably. Either one.
For the people that like self-torture, I never understood the heat factor. I'm a little kid. We're at my Aunt Minnie and Uncle Angela's restaurant. Angerman's up there in Kenilworth. All the people around, and they bring out the bread, the oil, and the peppers. And so they cut the peppers with the seeds. Jeannie, Lamage, their lips would friggin' blister, sweat on the foreheads, and that's the old ladies and the men. Oh, that's so good. That's just so good. What?
Well, then you would use the chili powder because it's less of a kick.
Okay, a little non sequitur there.
Now, if you want to kick it up a little more, you can use a teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes. That would be fiery hot.
Oh, boy, this is colonoscopy time on this one. Okay. And I see here, Jeannie, you have handwriting again. You have very good handwriting, by the way. 2 teaspoons of brown sugar. Now, is that like a counterbalance, again, in all seriousness, to the chili powder or cayenne or the red pepper flakes?
Yes, it is. So it's more like that brown sugar has molasses in it.
Okay.
So it's better than regular white sugar. So it's not as sweet. And it also creates like a syrup when cooked.
Okay.
Okay. So then, it's like a syrupy flavor.
And some salt and pepper. Now you have the fish in a tent. Now the grill, gas grill, charcoal grill, what, medium heat, high heat, close the lid, open the lid? What's the deal?
Medium heat, close the lid.
Okay. How long?
Okay, 10 to 15 minutes on the grill.
And that's it? How you
And then just check with a fork at the thickest part of the fish until it's like flaky on the fork.
Okay.
And it's done, so it's quick.
Okay, I learned, Jeannie, instead of sticking a fork in there, because I always mess that up, the meat goes through, but pull the dorsal fin out. You keep the fins on. Jeannie, I'm thinking this will be, we had a 2 great weak fish segments earlier in the program. Listen, this would be a great recipe for weak fish as well. And then this shows, yes. You get this recipe and write it down. It's going to be on my blog. It should be on by the weekend. Okay. You can listen to the show there and check out. It's going to be segment 5. Chef Gene Lamage, this is really good. Gene, now what about for a side? What do we got?
Okay. A side would be a nice citrus salad. What I like is a blood orange and fennel salad.
What's a blood orange? Something menstrual? What's that? Blood orange. What is
that? Oh, blood orange is a type of orange. It's a darker fleshy color, like a crimson color, dark flesh.
Okay.
It's a little bit more money than a regular orange navel, but you can get them in the stores. I'm trying to see. It's not all the time.
Okay.
But they're seasonal through like May, the oranges.
Now
they have them at Whole Foods, at ShopRite, Wegmans. Sometimes you can find them at Acme, not all of the time.
Not all the time. Now I see you have your amber fennel sliced thin. Fennel's a fennel, because that's kind of like menthol-y or spicy or something, correct?
Yes. No, it's a member of the carrot family. It's like a flowering plant, and you use the bulb of it. It's a white round bulb, and that's what you cut sliced thin.
Okay. Now, what about for a dressing?
And it's crunchy. It's like a crunchy texture. It's sweet. If you like licorice flavor.
That's like an anise. That's what I meant. Yep. Okay, I got it.
Yes, it is. It's like an anise. It comes from Italy. It's indigenous to the shores like of the Mediterranean, especially in the dry soils like near the seacoast and riverbanks.
The Amalfi Coast.
Now it's,
okay.
Yeah. Now it's in New Jersey, so you can get it here.
Now, what do you do for a dressing?
Dressing, olive oil and squeezed lemon, a quarter a cup of olive oil. I like the extra virgin olive oil.
Okay.
And one lemon squeezed.
Okay.
Whisk it together, whisk it, and then throw in the salt and pepper, regular black pepper and salt.
Listeners, you're going to have a new appreciation for stocked rainbow trout. Check this recipe out. It is a killer. You're going to keep everyone you catch. Trust me on this. Trust me on this one. Well, Dean, what about a... It's grilling. You have to have a libation. What's the deal? What do you have?
Oh, Tom P. for a drink?
Yeah.
I'm thinking a cold, icy cold Blue Moon Belgian White Ale with an orange slice on the side coming up for, the spring, summer months.
Yeah, man, you're dangerous around a grill. Good Lord.
It's fun. Just watch out for the bears.
You're right. Okay, yeah, up where you are, yes. Now, Judy, kick-ass dessert. It's blueberry time here, so it's going to be kicking in pretty soon. Blueberry season. What do you think?
Exactly, blueberry pie a la mode, ice cream on top, vanilla. I prefer Turkey Hill ice cream.
And there you go, Chef Gene DeMage. Thanks so much. Easy. Listen, it's called trout spice up with a kick, rainbow trout on the grill. Plenty of stock trout out there. Before the cormorants and ospreys get them all, they're biting their heads off. The feed bags are on. Try this recipe. You can hear it on my blog when they put the show in on the podcast. Check it out. Gene, thanks for joining us. You take care. Have a great weekend. And I understand you're doing pretty well with the rainbows, correct?
Oh, thank you. Yes. I'll be out there this weekend.
There you go. Fishing. Hey, best of Jack and Tom and Dad. Do me a favor. Tell Dad to smile. I mean, whoa.
Oh, I love fishing with Dad. Okay.
Take care, Gene. See you soon.
Oh, thank you, Tom P.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
That'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio. Great recipe there. Rainbow trout with a kick. Try it. Grill it, man. It's good. Just check the podcast on the blog. We're jamming, slamming, otherwise cramming. God bless America. God bless the troops. God bless our first responders. Get out there and enjoy. Plenty of fishing going on. A lot of things happening. Fishing reports. Call Captain Dave the Rave Show at Seacon Bay. Call Noel at One Stop. Things are happening, man. Billy and Eddie of Fanatics on West Avenue in Ocean City. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio.
95.5 FM.